Good afternoon. There's going to be quite a celebration down in Thomaston, Maine, next Tuesday, to honor the 200th birthday of General Henry Knox. I know that many of you have visited his mansion, Montpelier, between Thomaston and Rockland. If you haven't, you should. You've probably seen his portrait by Gilbert Stuart in Boston's Museum of Fine Arts. And you've heard of Knox County, Maine, and Fort Knox, where the nation's gold is kept. But what of the man, Henry Knox? It seems a pity that young America never heard of him. They know about the Boston Massacre, the Battle of Bunker Hill, and how the cannon that Ethan Allen captured at Ticonderoga was brought to Boston and used to drive out the British. But the man who figured in all these stirring events, and who shouted the orders when Washington crossed the Delaware, and was Washington's right-hand man and advisor, has, I regret to say, been forgotten by most of his countrymen. Only a comparatively small group of patriotic American citizens have kept his memory alive by rebuilding his home, Montpelier, by observing his birthday each July the 25th, and now they are engaged in saving for posterity the old Knox Church in Thomaston and its famous bell, cast in the foundry of Henry Knox's friend and fellow patriot, Paul Revere. Henry Knox was born in Boston on July the 25th, 1750, in a big gambrel-roofed house down near the waterfront. There were 10 boys in that family, but 6 of them died young. 2 were lost at sea, leaving Henry and his brother William to care for an ailing and heartbroken mother after Mr. Knox failed in business and went off to the West Indies. Henry was 12 when all this happened, and he had to quit Boston Latin School and go to work in a bookbindery. But the proprietor was a kind old gent, and he gave little Henry Knox some valuable advice. Take these French books home and study them well. French will come in handy someday. And he also let the lad read up on ballistics and military tactics as practiced by the warring nations across the sea. Henry was fascinated with that subject, and he learned how cannon were cast, bored, mounted, and fired. And there's no doubt whatever that his intimate knowledge of such important military matters helped Washington win the Revolution. At that time, all the heavy guns were made in Europe, and young Knox dreamed of the day when cannon could be cast here in America. He had his own idea of how a military college should be operated, and he thought a separate school should be set up for naval students, and he was also quite a diplomat. This was brought out by his action that dreary December day in 1770 when he was coming home from Charlestown and ran into a rumpus on King Street. Some rowdies were throwing snowballs at the British soldiers and calling them names. Henry arrived at the rear of the old state house just as Captain Preston matched up with a company of redcoats. Knox was only 20 then, but he had sense enough to know that this was a ticklish situation. And grabbing Captain Prescott by the coattails, he begged him not to fire into the mob. But at that moment, one of the rowdies struck a soldier, the redcoats fired, and the Boston Massacre was on. Although only 4 died as a result of that incident, it was never forgotten, and was, incidentally, one of the overt acts which brought the Revolution to a head later on. This affair bothered young Henry Knox, because secretly he was keeping company with a luscious young lady from the upper crust of Tory society on Beacon Hill. She was lovely Lucy Fluker, daughter of Sir Thomas Fluker, secretary of the Royal British Province and personal friend of His Majesty George III. Naturally, it wouldn't help Henry's cause any to be identified with a gang of rabble-rousing rebels. But Lucy didn't mind, as she had already made up her mind about Henry Knox. She loved him. And if he wanted to pal around with Paul Revere, it was okay by her. And she frankly told her Tory father just how she felt about the stalwart, pink-chinked young man who liked to dress up in fancy uniform and parade with the ancient and honorable artillery company. 4 days after Henry Knox had passed his 21st birthday, he opened his bookstore on Cornhill in Boston. And as it was stocked with the latest editions from London, the literary bigwigs, many of them Tories, became his best customers. His most welcome customer, who came to browse around the book racks, was 18-year-old Lucy Fluker. And when her father heard about it, he was furious. "I forbid you ever to visit that bookshop again. Henry Knox, a worthless rebel." Well, they were married on the 16th of June, 1774. And then the Fluker family tried to turn Henry's sympathies to the Tory cause, but all in vain. On the afternoon of April 18th, 1775, just before the British left Boston for Lexington and Concord, Henry left his bookstore on Cornhill and dashed home to find Lucy bless her loyal heart, sewing her husband's sword into the lining of his coat. And when he hastened to Cambridge to report to General Ward and be assigned to Charlestown Neck, Lucy was right at his side. A few days later, Henry Knox, because of his knowledge of ordnance, was ordered to fortify Dorchester Heights. And as he departed, General Ward shouted, "Here, wait a minute. You'll need a uniform and a commission." "Time for that later," said Henry, as he mounted his horse, blew a kiss to his bride, and galloped off into the darkness. You can read of his contribution at Dorchester Heights on the bronze tablets which stand there. A few weeks later on, General George Washington expressed a desire to meet the young man who had been too busy building fortifications to bother with a uniform and a commission. And when Henry showed up at Washington's headquarters, he had Lucy with him. Historians have never agreed which of these two young people made the most favorable impression. Knox and Washington became lifelong friends, Henry becoming Washington's right-hand military man, and Lucy giving suggestions of a social nature to Martha Washington. The winter of 1775, following the attack at Lexington and Concord, and the more disastrous battle at Bunker Hill, was a hard one for Washington. To be sure, he had the British bottled up in Boston, but his so-called army consisted of untrained farmers, and they had practically nothing to fight with. "If we only had some cannon," Washington said, "we might be able to drive them out." He was interrupted by his aide. "There's a young man outside who wishes to see you. Says his name is Knox." Well, after greetings were exchanged, Henry came to the point. "You are aware, sir, that Ethan Allen captured a lot of cannon at Lake Champlain. With your permission, I'd like to go get them." Washington looked out at the dreary November landscape and sighed. "It's a noble idea, of course, but I fear impossible. Winter will be here any day. You'd need a force of men and the Lord only knows how many horses to get those heavy guns through the wilderness." "That's just the point, sir. Winter's the only time to transport them over frozen lakes and streams. I'll organize a force of farmers and use their oxen. And if we have a good freeze, I ought to have that ordnance back here by New Year's Day." General Washington smiled for the first time in days, clapped the young Yankee bookseller on the shoulder and said, "Go ahead, and may God speed you. Only he knows how badly we need those guns." And the next morning, Henry Knox and his brother Bill, now out of a job because the British had burned their bookshop, set off on horseback through a driving snowstorm for Lake Champlain. They stopped in Springfield, New York, and Albany to engage carpenters and blacksmiths and to hire or buy outright every pair of oxen they could find. These were assembled and the carpenters set to work constructing sleds and scows. And as soon as they were finished, Henry Knox loaded them with ton upon ton of captured British cannon. Then in the face of howling blizzards and below zero temperature, the long train of ox-drawn sleds set out for Boston. Up and down the wavering line of oxen, horses, and men rode Henry Knox, dismounting whenever it became necessary to dig the sleds out of the snowdrifts or chop down trees to build bridges across icy streams. He constantly urged the faltering farmers to keep going, and he found food for both men and animals in that wild winter wilderness. They had to cross the frozen Hudson River four times, and when their heavily loaded scows nearly capsized in the wind-lashed waters of Lake George, it was Henry Knox who led them to safety. Day after day, night after night, week after week, they crawled at snail's pace, finally reaching Albany, then over the ice-coated trails through the Berkshires, then across the whole state of Massachusetts in stinging sleet and driving snow, until on the verge of exhaustion, they arrived at Washington's headquarters on the outskirts of Boston. Henry Knox, the man who engineered and executed this seemingly impossible feat, and who, by the way, didn't take off his clothes for 40 days and nights, was then only 25 years old. His brother William Knox was only 19. Congress was so impressed they made Henry a colonel, and Washington agreed to let young Knox choose the spot where the cannon would do the most good. He picked Dorchester Heights again and set up the guns he'd dragged from Ticonderoga. And when old man Howe of His Majesty's Royal Forces woke up one morning in March 1776 and saw the snouts of all those big guns aimed at his fleet, he hauled up his anchor and hightailed it for Halifax. And with him went all of the Tories, including the father and mother of Lucy Knox. They had to admit that their daughter had married a mighty promising and courageous young man. Boston still celebrates Evacuation Day every March the 17th, But not one in 10,000 ever remembers it was Henry Knox who made that victory celebration possible. To give you an idea of the love and respect Henry Knox had for his commander, let me say that when Lord Howe was in possession of Long Island, New York, he dispatched a messenger under a flag of truce with a letter to the commander of the American forces. Knox was the officer who received it. And noting that the envelope was addressed to Mr. George Washington, he sent the message bearer back saying, "If you'll have his lordship change Mr. to General Washington, I'll be pleased to deliver the letter." The night that Washington crossed the Delaware to attack Trenton, he had a bad sore throat, and he couldn't make his voice heard above the roar of the wind and the crashing of the ice cakes. So stout Henry Knox stepped up and shouted the orders to the boatmen. And a few hours later, he directed the firing of the same cannon he dragged from Ticonderoga that blasted the Hessians from the haystacks and caused over 1,000 of them to surrender. During the Battle of Trenton, 3 different horses were shot from under Henry Knox. He was that close to the fighting. The day after the Battle of Trenton, Henry Knox was promoted to Brigadier General, and he was only 26 years old. Some say he was unduly fastidious because he insisted on taking his wooden bathtub through all the campaigns. You should see that funny-looking tub, and you can, for it's just one of the many, many interesting relics of this great American patriot preserved at Montpelier down there in Thomaston, Maine. When you visit the Knox Memorial, be sure to see the traveling kit which Lafayette gave General Knox, and the handsome bookcase brought over from Versailles for Marie Antoinette. In the few minutes left, let me mention just a few of the things that Henry Knox did for his country. Early in the war, he suggested that we cast our own cannon, and he went to Salisbury, Connecticut, to inspect deposits of iron ore, and then to Springfield, where he established a foundry that later became the famous Springfield Arsenal. It was Henry Knox who insisted that we have a school where army officers could be trained to handle men as well as guns. And given the go-ahead, Knox went 50 miles up the Hudson from New York City and founded West Point. He established the Naval Training School at Newport, Rhode Island, took a hand in building the Constellation and Old Ironsides, and because he felt that too many ships were being lost going round Cape Cod, he went down to Barnstable and surveyed the Cape for a canal. He estimated the cost at around $300,000, but Congress refused to give him the money. Then when World War I broke out and the Navy needed that canal, Congress shelled out $11 million for the Cape Cod ditch that Henry Knox had wanted to dig. It was Washington who said, "In time of peace, prepare for war." And it was our first Secretary of War, Henry Knox, who said, "All right, let's enroll every male citizen between the ages of 18 and 60. But Congress turned down that idea, as it had the plans for the Cape Cod Canal. However, when the First World War came along in 1917, and we needed an army in a hurry, somebody dug into the War Department archives, and lo and behold, there in Henry Knox's own handwriting were the plans for a civilian army, and they were put to good use. It would take several broadcasts to tell all the achievements of this American patriot who isn't as well known as he should be. 2 years ago, I described his mansion, Montpelier, and many of you will recall that broadcast. Montpelier is filled with authentic furnishings of revolutionary times. It's beautifully decorated, and a great many of General Knox's personal belongings are on display. And on next Tuesday, there will be a grand celebration in Thomaston, Maine, to honor Henry Knox, who was Washington's right-hand man through all the American Revolution.